Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 134 of the Mom Hour. I'm Sarah Powers, and I'm here, as always, with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah. How's it hanging?
It's good. It's the holidays. We are in it. We are deep into the holidays.
Yes, we really are.
And we're going to do a bunch of listener questions today. We got a whole bunch on our Instagram as Instagram comments this week. We did this last year. It's just a really fun way, I think, to go through some of the parenting challenges that come up during the holidays. I don't know that you and I are going to solve all these problems, but if anything, it's helpful, I think, for moms to hear that other moms, we're all going through the same stuff.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Yep. During the holidays.
And we're all going a little crazy. So
we're all going a little crazy. And we're going to move kind of quickly. I took more. I'm putting more questions on our outline than we typically take. But
yeah, there are quite a few on there, Sarah.
There are.
You know how easily I get overwhelmed by information.
I know. Just don't look. Just turn away. Avert your eyes.
I'll turn away.
Avert your eyes from the outline, Megan. No, because what I noticed is they really all fall under similar themes. And we'll get into that. But so I think we're going to be able to tackle them all. We're going to move fast. So let's get right into our sponsor for the day for this first part of the show, and that is Storyworth. Storyworth makes it easy and fun for your loved ones to share their stories with weekly emailed story prompts. So let me tell you how this works. You gift a Storyworth subscription to, say, your mom or your aunt or your grandma, and every week they get an email prompting them with a question to share something about their life or the family history or something they've experienced growing up. They then type that into an email, but at the end of the year, it's collected into a beautiful hardcover book. So, Megan, I know how much you love family stories in your family. This just is really puts a little bit of structure around it and really allows loved ones to sort of draw out those family stories.
I love that because, you know, I feel like sometimes those stories become kind of old hat and you forget to talk about them. It's like you stop bringing them up. So I love the opportunity to learn more about your relatives, maybe the stuff that doesn't always come, like the story that doesn't always come up at the dinner party, the one you didn't, you know, you never haven't heard about yet.
Yeah.
The prompts can really pull those out. And I also love that it blends digital with a real tangible object.
Yes.
Because that's important to a lot of people of older generations, but it's important to me too. We talked a lot on the show about how, like, if everything is digital and nothing is tangible, it just gets lost. Like, it doesn't, none of it really exists. So I love the idea that it makes it really easy to share the stories via email and technology, but then it also gives you that tangible object.
Yeah, that keepsake. And you can get as fancy as you want with Storyworth. So you can go in and add photos. You can even call in and record audio tellings of some of these stories. So it has the ability to get as fancy as you want. But at the very simplest level, it's simply providing sort of like a journal prompt every week for your loved one to share a different story. So I tried this out with my mom. And one of my favorite questions that she got was to share memories of her grandmother when she was growing up. Because if you think about it, like, I'm thinking about a book like this for my kids, and she's their grandmother, but then she's sharing memories of her grandmother, which is like several generations above my kids and someone that they would never know. So little things like that. And some of the questions are really just everyday things, like what was going to the grocery store like when you were a kid? Or I think I made that one up, but it's the type of stuff that allows you to capture a slice of life
that you wouldn't necessarily just talk about.
Exactly.
That's what I love about it. Yeah.
Like I said, there's a lot to customize. You can skip a week. If you don't like a question, you can customize your own. There's just a kind of an unending ability to make this your own. But I think that little bit of structure is a really cool way to start those conversations and share family stories. So I know,
and like always, we have a coupon.
Yes, we do. So we've got $20 off for you guys. And again, just to be clear, you are gifting this to the loved one whose stories you want to capture. So that's kind of the cool idea. You're the one gifting the subscription. They're the one writing the stories. So for $20 off, you visit storyworth.com/themomhour. And again, saves you $20. Storyworth.com/themomhour, and really great holiday gift idea, and can be last minute because we are kind of last minute here. But since this is sort of a digital gift, there's still time. Okay, so let's get into these listener holiday questions. Again, they all came from Instagram. And as I was going through them, they really sort of, there's some hot themes that come up during the holidays. And so I kind of grouped them that way, and we'll go kind of quick. But the first theme that arose is parents of little ones and dealing with shaken up schedules and routines during the holidays. So I'm going to read Liz's question. And then as we talk, I'll probably bring in some other listener questions, but they were all around this theme. So Liz asks, how do you balance all the celebrations with enough sleep and quiet time for toddlers and preschoolers? Her daughter's three. She says, I know the schedules will be off, but how much do we push the family for an earlier dinner and present opening on Christmas Eve to preserve sleep and going to bed on time? I'd love to hear your thoughts. And so I actually love that she's asking specifically about Christmas Eve, because that is, it's like you think about it as this night, oh my gosh, everyone's staying up and getting so excited. But then when you actually have like a 2- and a 4-year-old, you're like, right. I don't want them to be awake, like, and right. running around in the middle of the night on Christmas Eve. So it's a good Agreed. Question.
Yeah. And it sounds like Liz's daughter is the only kid
yes.
in the entire family, which makes it tough. Like I was the first, I want to say we were the first son in either. Oh, no, my sister had kids before I did, but I still was one among the first yeah. to have kids. And on John's side, definitely. And that made it really tough because everyone was out of that mode. Like his yeah. parents were out of that mode. His brother and sister weren't in that mode yet. And it does make it tough to kind of like set those boundaries.
Yeah. And know like yeah. when do you want to put your foot down and say, you know what, we're not going to come over for a 7 o'clock dinner on Christmas Eve. That's yeah. hard with family. Here's one thing I will offer. And it's sort of falls under the like the pick your battles thing. I think kids, we've talked a lot about how kids often do better than you think. So if you have a kid who's really used to their schedule, if you mess with that schedule once or twice, they probably will do better than you think, actually. Often yeah. it's the mom who is like afraid of Losing poking the bear, afraid of yes. messing with a good system. However, yeah. we all know that if kids schedules are messed with for like 5 days straight, every nap and every bedtime, nobody's going to be happy.
Right.
So I think when you look at we're coming up on Christmas week, when you look at what your commitments are, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, the day after, I would say, I think you can pick one or two times to say, to maybe put your foot down and say, you know, our family needs an early night in that night, or our daughter's really going to need a nap that day. And sort of maybe stagger it a little bit. Does that make sense? So then you're meeting people halfway, and you know, if you have a really late night on Christmas Eve, you might need to keep it quiet Christmas Day and make sure she gets a nap. I mean, it sounds kind of simple, but I guess it doesn't have to be all one or all the other.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I mean, if it was really, truly just Christmas Eve, and you know that I was probably more laid back about this than a lot of moms, but if we're really just looking at one night, I think it's okay to let that go. I don't think you have to worry that things are going to completely fall apart. You know your kid best, so maybe right. I'm wrong, and your kid is the one who will absolutely melt down if they are kept up too late or whatever. I think if you're talking like one day, there are ways to kind of compensate on either side for that.
Yeah.
But you still get to push. Maybe you just don't have to push quite as hard as you think you do, you know?
Yeah. And I also think, so this is going to transition into the next question, which was similar, and it came from Emily, and she has a 4-month-old and a 2-year-old. And she was asking similar questions, but she was also saying, like, how do you know what to opt into and what to opt out on to keep the kids on their schedule? And my answer is going to be, what makes mama happy, basically? Right. Like, in terms of keeping kids up late on Christmas Eve, if the kids are happy and the adults are happy, and I know there are lots of families where little babies and toddlers and everybody's running around late at night, and if everybody's happy, that's not a problem to solve. But when it starts to wear and tear on mom's ability to enjoy family time, have a glass of wine. I know, like, when I was sticking hardcore to kids' schedules, it was usually for my mental health, not because I thought my kids were going to suffer without it. So to yeah. Emily's question, how did you pick and choose what to do? And I think she's also talking about parties and get-togethers and
right.
You know, fun things, going to see Santa, all those things. You can't do everything. We've talked about that a million times. So I think you get to be a little bit selfish and know that the kids will be okay. They'll be flexible enough with their schedule, but you might reach a point where you feel like you need a little bit of normalcy. And so, I don't know. Is that selfish of me?
No. Why would that be selfish of you? My thing was skip all of it. That was yeah. the advice I was going to give. Just skip it all. Just call in sick.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that there are things, you know, especially if you're spending a lot of time with little kids, the holiday season can actually seem really welcome because you want to get out and see people yeah. you haven't seen for a while. And maybe there are holiday parties to go to, and that can be really fun and exciting when you're in that season of life. But then you have to kind of balance that out with the stress that it can cause to even go.
Yeah.
I would also say that if we're talking about parties and things outside of the house, it sounds like, you know, Emily mentions in another comment, wearing her baby. So mm-hmm. that might be the kind of thing you just go to with the baby.
Yeah.
And leave the 2-year-old with the sitter.
That's a great idea.
I don't think taking a 2-year-old almost anywhere is can qualify as fun.
That's not holiday spirit. Leave the 2-year-old at home.
Well, I mean, it depends what it is. Are we talking like a family party?
Right.
Are we talking like a party that kids are invited to, but it's not really, you know, we all know what that kind of party looks like. Like, yeah, kids can come, but it's not really for the kids.
Yeah.
To me, that's the kind of thing where you might want to judiciously use a grandma, grandpa, you know, or the babysitter next door or whatever. But, you know, if you want to bring the baby, maybe that's not going to be such a big deal. I just like, you know how we've talked about before, like I never think there's option A and B. There's always a C, D, and E. And
yeah.
So maybe think about it. Maybe you just go for a little bit. Maybe you go and see how it goes.
Leave
if things start to fall apart. Just having like an out, you know?
I totally agree. I also think people are relatively understanding, and maybe you have the relatives who aren't, and that's a bummer. But I think people are relatively understanding, even if they don't have young kids, that, you know, family, every family is different, and you do get to set those priorities. Like we've said a million times, like you get to decide, and people aren't going to hate you. They really do understand. I have found when I've said, you know, we're going to come, but we're going to leave a little bit early or whatever the accommodations are. I think people in general understand. Everybody's doing their best during the holidays, and everybody's facing stressors of some kind, whether it's little kids or health issues or just stress in general. So I think people are probably more forgiving than you think. And going with your own, what you want to really be a part of and opt out of, I think is a good guide.
I would agree.
Emily also asked about germs, which I think is good to touch on really quickly. And that kind of has to do with going to all these parties. Do you remember, I mean, you had a lot of winter babies and I know you wore a lot of your babies. Do you remember that feeling of like not wanting people to touch your baby during the holidays?
Oh, this is where I have to admit that I loved it when people held my baby.
Oh, really? So like, you're, but so see, places. Okay, that's interesting.
But
I would have thought you were a little more germ conscious.
You did?
I don't know.
I was really not very germ. I didn't have babies that got sick a lot.
Yeah.
And also, I will also say, the kind of things I was doing when my babies were that age was just a lot of family stuff.
Yes.
I don't think we went to a lot of big parties with strangers. I probably would have felt very differently. It was more like, hey, this is our, you know, Christmas or New Year's party with all of my siblings and maybe some cousins or whatever. Sure, I'll just pass the baby around.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different than what Emily's talking about.
Yeah, I can see that. And for sure, my germophobia really much more crops up at like public play places and doctor's offices.
Yeah, those places eke me out.
Yeah, I'm the same. I actually don't have big concerns about family gatherings and passing babies around with regular precautions. If you have a preemie, if you have a baby with, you know, health, but her baby's 4 months. Yeah. And I would say like when I had a healthy 4-month-old during a holiday season, I don't think it was like a huge stressor for me. So that might be one where if your baby's healthy and everybody around you is, you know, not kissing the baby on the mouth, then maybe that's one that you can let go a little bit or just, you know, just.
And it's like a muscle too, like that you have to
kind
of flex. So, you know, if you're worried about it, and again, we're not talking about preemies and immunocompromised babies or babies who just get sick all of the time. Like I had friends whose little kids always were picking up stomach bugs.
Yeah. Oh,
had I had a kid
worst.
Who was always picking up a stomach bug, I would have probably locked myself in my house for 5 years because I didn't deal well with those to begin with. And that would have been like that PTSD or PTSD where you're like, oh, they're going to puke again. I was fortunate that, or like chronic ear infections. I was just fortunate that that wasn't something I had to deal with. So if you also have not yet had to deal with that and you think it's because you're keeping your baby from anybody touching them, it might just be because your baby has that kind of constitution and you can probably, you know, just test it out a little bit, just see how it works to have a couple people hold them. And that's one of the nice things about having a 4-month-old. Really, they're like portable.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to hold them.
And
if you a little bit of a break.
If you truly are in a big crowd situation, then I think what Emily said is right on, which is wear them, keeping them in the car seat.
Yep.
And just they're pretty darn safe in there. I mean, no one's going to lean over a car seat and sneeze, I hope. So,
well, you don't know.
You never
know. You don't know Emily's family.
I did one time have a 5-week-old in a carrier in that I was wearing in an airport and had a lady reach in to touch like into my baby Bjorn, like into my personal space to touch my baby.
Yeah, that,
5 weeks
creepy.
Old, too. I was like, that was like when the gut reaction, like, comes up and I just wanted to kind of like shove her away. Like, what are you doing? Like, get your hands
what
out
are you
of my
thinking?
Space. Okay. So I think that kind of, that was the sort of like schedules and routines and life management little theme. And now we got a ton of questions about gift giving and gratitude and sharing.
Yep.
And this is like a big gnarly one. So maybe let's just talk general. The basic idea was, how do you teach gratitude? And we've actually done a whole episode about this. But specifically, like, let's say we're talking about Christmas morning. Kids are getting a lot. And also sharing. So Jennifer wrote in with a 3- and 1-year-old and is wondering about teaching sharing when kids are getting their own gifts. And she asks, should I label everything for both of them? And I would say no.
I actually think that does the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, then it's for both of, like, then it belongs to both of them, so they're not really sharing it, you know?
Exactly. I wouldn't do that. I would, first of all, accept that there are going to be some meltdowns on Christmas right. Day over toys and sharing, and it's no different than any other day. So if you kind of know that going in, I think it's actually a good experience for even little kids to start to learn of if somebody has a special toy. So here's how toys work in my house. In my house, toys that are in the common area, we take turns. In general, they don't specifically belong to one kid. Or even if they do, if it's past that sort of statute of limitations of, like, I just got this for my birthday yesterday, it still can be played with by anyone, you know, within moderation.
Right.
So I think when someone gets a special gift, if that 3-year-old gets a really special gift, I think it's okay to say to the 1-year-old, you know, that's Owen's. He got that and he's really excited to play with it today. He's probably not up for sharing it today. So let me help you find something else to do. I think that's okay to say to a 1-year-old and deal with the tears personally. Now, it's not sustainable forever to say you can't touch your brother's things and you can't touch your other brother's things. But I think on Christmas, it's kind of okay to let kids have their special things. And the good news is they're going to get a lot of stuff. So there's enough stuff to distract. I don't know. Are you?
That's what I was going to say. So I was in the situation where I had 3- and 1-year-old boys twice.
Yeah.
So I've been in this exact world at Christmas time and at birthdays. I do remember usually getting them at least one thing that was a shared gift, only because it was probably something big that applied to them both.
Right.
Like, you know, I remember one year, like, the big gift was one of those, like, ride-in cars. And, you know, technically one kid was, like, a little too little to be in it. But, you know,
it was
something they could both use. So, like you said, there's enough stuff that everyone's pretty happy. I never found that to be a big issue. Sometimes, yes. Like, the 1-year-old would spy the 3-year-old opening something he really wanted, or vice versa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sometimes. And it would cause an issue, and then you deal with it and it passes. I don't think that necessarily trying to get around that by labeling things for both kids is necessarily going to really head that off at the pass.
Yeah.
You know, it's still going to be an issue, because even if there's one thing in two kids, it doesn't matter who it belongs to. If both kids want to play with it, it has to be dealt with. Another thing I want to say about that really quick is, at that age, I just found, especially with any kid who was like toddlery, like crawling or kind of a small walker or not super verbal yet, I just sat on the floor and was at, like, eye level. And I found that I could, like, head things off at the pass a lot quicker. And the more proactive I was, the less time these little dust ups took to get over. And then the happier I was. And I know that can be really annoying. Like, when all you want to do is sit in a chair like a normal adult and open your presents and drink your coffee or whatever it is you're doing and eat your cinnamon roll and not have to, like, be refereeing the entire time. I know how frustrating that is. But honestly, like, the more proactive I was in situations that were outside of the norm.
Yep.
So anything that's not normal life, the more I got down.
Yeah, and you had to be on your A game. I think that totally makes sense.
Yes, the more I hovered, the happier I was and the less stressed I was. So I'm not a hoverer in general. I almost never would have been like that on a regular day. But on Christmas morning, especially Christmas morning with, like, outside relatives or people, you know, that I don't usually share time with like that. Yeah. Absolutely. The more on it and in it I am, the better off everything went.
So. I agree. And I'm just going to put an end cap on that I really would caution against forcing a 3-year-old to share brand new toys with a younger sibling in almost any case. It's going to backfire. It's not going to teach sharing. If you have to solve the problem by separating them for a little bit so the 3-year-old gets time with his new set of Duplos and somebody plays with the 1-year-old, so you don't want them fighting necessarily. Right. And you don't want the 3-year-old being unkind or pushing the 1-year-old down. But I think expecting a 3-year-old to share brand new toys with a 1-year-old is kind of a recipe for disaster.
I think you're right. And also remember that 1-year-olds are kind of dumb.
They're jerks.
Just like a bunch of nerve endings.
We do not like 1-year-olds on this show. Yeah.
No, I mean, no. They're just They're so easy to distract.
Yeah.
They're so easy to like fool. You can trick. I mean, not every 1 year old, of course, there's always exceptions because I can hear people going, not my 1 year old.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're not that with it. If you bring them in another room and show them something else or go, oh, what's this? You haven't opened yet or something like that. There's so many ways to head them off and give the 3 year old their space, which they deserve. They don't.
Yes. And I would spend the time on that distraction rather than spend it expecting the 3 year old to share. Totally.
Yeah.
OK, so follow up question. Jessica has 3 and 6 year olds and is asking about teaching the kids to show gratitude to relatives. And I feel like you and I have kind of touched on this in different ways. So maybe we can be quick. But she asks, are they just at the age where I can just expect to have to keep repeating, say thank you to grandma for the present?
Yep.
And I think in a way, kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it is just a reminder. I'm a big fan of pep talks beforehand. And I think
I
you do this
say,
too.
Coaching.
Yes. Like coaching. Yes. Coaching them that you might not love everything that you get. You might not get everything on your list. That everything that we get, we can show our gratitude for. And here's how. I also think modeling is great for this. When kids see you, you know, thanking others for their gifts, but that doesn't, modeling doesn't always stick on that same day. It's a lot. That's the long tail. So,
yeah. And also I want to, two things. The coaching thing reminds me of when my kids were little and I had a lot of them, they were, you know, like 5 kids that are under 11 years old. And we would go to restaurants and I would like sit in the car and it was like I was at a pep rally. It was like, we're going to go in there and we are going to be the best. We are going to put our napkins in our laps and we are going to be polite. And I feel like the more I kind of just kept making these we are statements, like the more they kind of got into the idea that we were going to be the best family in the whole restaurant. I'm not even ashamed to admit it. I would say things like, we're going to be the best family in the whole restaurant. And when we leave, people will talk about how great we were. But you know what?
Like,
my kids were fantastic in restaurants when they were little. And I think part of it was just going in with that really like over the top can do attitude. So I think that that really can be helpful. The other thing that I will say, though, is relatives often are just looking for the canned thank you. They don't expect real gratitude.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is it's almost like what we're talking about for Christmas Day thank yous is different than actual gratitude. We once did a whole show about cultivating gratitude in kids, and I can link to that. But what we're really talking about is social graces when they receive.
Exactly. We're talking about niceties.
Both are important. Yeah, both are important. Yeah. The other thing I was going to say that has worked well for my kids when they were little is get them excited about the giving. And that does help take some of the focus off of the receiving. And I think it's all related to gratitude. So it may not elicit those exact thank yous, but even if they haven't been part of the shopping or the picking out or the wrapping, if they can be the little elf that helps pass out the presents on Christmas morning, or if they get to help somebody else open their present, like another person's present, and be the helper. So they get to see everybody's sort of joy and excitement about giving and receiving. And it just in little ways takes the sort of emphasis off of their just getting. So
I do want to mention to Jessica that a 6 year old, especially a precocious 6 year old, may be getting to the point where they will challenge you and say things like, well, what if grandma gets me something I don't like? What if she gets me something I already have? Do I have to? Like, aren't I supposed to be honest? Like, kids will try to play that stuff on you sometimes and kind of throw back all the things you've said about honesty. Like, kind of try to throw that back in your face a little bit. And so at that point, you know, part of the coaching would be, you don't have to say you love something,
right?
Or you can't wait to play with it. There are other things. There's other ways to say thank you.
Yes.
You know, and we could rattle a whole bunch off. But I mean, especially kids who are smart enough to ask that question are smart enough to take the answer.
Yeah. And smart enough to play the empathy game where you think, you know, think how someone would feel if they watched you open the gift and you made a sad face. They might, you know, their feelings might be hurt. So all of that kind of coaching and talking them through. And then, like you said, it's like a super hands-on, super in-your-face day of gifts and gratitude. And then you go back to the regular practice of instilling gratitude in our kids over time, which is like a totally bigger picture, different thing. It's not just all happen.
No, and that I think these are two totally different things. Like, to me, I mean, the idea, and I remember getting really hung up on the idea that my kids should show gratitude and then going to things where they were being given stuff that wasn't even fun. Like, if I were a kid, I would not be grateful for. And that was when I really changed the way I approached that. Like, I looked at it very differently, and it was really it's just saying what's expected of them. It is the social contract.
Yeah.
That's all that this is. And we're not talking like big picture gratitude. That's a different thing. And so if you can separate those two things in your head, I think you'll just be happier.
Yeah. And it is still in the name of helping other people feel, you know, respected and and not have their feelings hurt. And so it is, it falls more under etiquette and manners, I think, than true gratitude. And it is still an important lesson. So, but there's inevitably going to be the time when last Christmas, Violet opened a pair of slippers from the Trolls movie that we thought she would get a kick out of because they had like the big troll hair coming off the slippers. Yeah. Now she was not even four. She was still three. So she gets a little bit of a pass, but she opened them and like kind of stared at them. They were from my parents and she threw them across the room.
Oh,
like without a word. She just like stared at him for a minute and then like chucked him across the room. We were like, oh, I guess you meant thank you. No, thank you. Anyway, it was just my parents. They thought it was funny, but so there will be those moments.
And you got to have a sense of humor about that.
Totally.
And, you know, hope that the people around you do too.
We also got a question, and this Instagrammer has a handle, but not a first name. But this is a good one. And I think my kids are in this phase of helping them understand they're not going to get everything they asked for. And so you and I have talked about making Santa lists and, you know, kind of the gimmies before. But just to reiterate, I think it's okay all Christmas season to be reminding your kids that they may not get everything they ask for, and almost helping them play out what that will look like. Like, oh, maybe I know my kids usually get some money from one great grandmother. So that might be something I say, well, you know, often you get a little bit of cash. So if you are disappointed or if you don't get something, then, you know, maybe that's something you save your money for. But I think dripping that out as a possibility early and often is helpful because it's going to happen. And I feel like kids get into this 6, 7, 8, 9 range and Christmas can be more disappointing. Not always, but they're old enough to remember past Christmases and have their big, huge hopes. And there is sometimes when it falls flat. And I think a little bit of, I don't know if it's planning or like, you know, coaching again to help with that. So I don't know.
And even when my kids make their lists, I'm always very careful to say like, you know, put down like 6 or 7 things you would like to get. Keep in mind that mom and dad are going to want to get you some things that aren't on the list because that's more fun for us.
Right.
Anything that you don't get can be moved to your birthday list.
Right.
And like prioritize. Make sure you put the thing you want the most at the top.
Yep.
And so I feel like there's all this pre-coaching and some depending on the age, like I have like my kids don't even really make real Christmas lists anymore. They kind of mention stuff to me in passing. And you want I want to tell you something really quick that's related. This is the first year that I can remember that I have bought no toys for Christmas.
Oh my gosh.
Not a single toy. Unless
that's
you count
crazy.
A yo-yo.
Yeah.
Wow. And nobody wants toys. Claire wants art supplies and books.
Yeah. Amazing.
And clothes.
Your end of an era.
I didn't even go down the toy aisle this year. Like I skipped it because at Target, all the holiday wrap is at the back.
Uh-huh.
And then all of the like shaving kits and all.
Yeah.
And the toys are in the middle and I just walked right past.
Oh my gosh.
It was crazy. Anyway, that's like just an aside, but I just realized how crazy that is. I do think there's been ages where they did have more of that like pie in the sky.
Yeah.
Idea about what a Christmas list was. And
or sometimes they get really specific. Reed will get really specific with his Lego sets and he'll usually put a few on there. So you can usually get one of the ones he wants, but you might not get all. So I do think that's something that starts to need to be addressed probably. Oh, she has 5 kids, 9 and under. I just read that.
Oh, my
this,
gosh.
This commenter who doesn't leave her first name. But I saw the 9 and under and that's where my kids are. And I do feel like that 7, 8, 9 is where they have really specific wish lists and they do require a little bit of reminding that it might not all be there. But disappointment is not a bad thing. It's something that we want our kids to learn to live with. So there's so much of the good stuff on Christmas morning that if a little disappointment management is part of it, that's okay too, I think.
And you know what I have to say? Like, I remember having a couple of really disappointing Christmas when I was little. And it wasn't because I didn't get the one thing I wanted or the one thing I thought I wanted the most. It was because none of the stuff I got felt like anything that I wanted. And so there's a big difference. Like, I feel like if you feel like someone, and some of that was, you know, just my family situation and people buying for me that didn't know me that well, which is tough. And also I was getting older. I was like a preteen. And
yes, those are the ones I remember, the 11 and 12, where you remember Christmas being so good. And then it happens and you're like, was that as good as I remember?
Like, yeah, that's like
it's more of a getting older thing.
Disillusionment. Yes. Mm. Right. So it's hard for me to parse apart what it was. When I was a little kid, I know for a fact I didn't get, like, I remember one Christmas when I asked for every strawberry shortcake set that there was. So I wanted the purple pieman. I wanted Strawberry's House. I wanted, I don't even remember what all their names were, but they were like all these strawberry shortcake figures. I wanted all of them. And I don't think I got any of them that year. And I still had a fantastic Christmas because I got stuff that I did like. Now, was I disappointed? I'm sure. But in my memory, it was still a great holiday.
And, so, and those excuse me, those disappointment, those emotions are so on the surface with little kids. Like they'll be super happy, super disappointed. Like it passes quickly. So I think as parents, we just have to remember it's just one of many emotions that will happen on Christmas Day. Real quick before we take a break, Amanda mentioned that she has a little bit of guilt that her second child isn't getting all the big ticket items that the first child got for Christmas. And I'm going to just go ahead and say, let that guilt go, girl, because the baby, they don't know that. So like her first got the little tykes car, like all the big things that you need when you have a first baby. So now the second baby is just getting normal Christmas presents and not the big ones, but the baby doesn't care. And the baby doesn't know. Care. And the big brother hasn't put it together yet. So it's all good. You just got that one. I think you can just really let it go. It all evens out. The baby will get spoiled in a different way than the big kid didn't. Yep. So it all evens out.
Yeah, I feel like 1, 2, and 3 years old, maybe all the way up to 4 is when you can totally get away with buying like $5 toys.
Yeah.
Matchbox cars. What you can get away with spending nothing on Christmas.
Yeah.
And your kid's going to be thrilled. So
and nobody's keeping score because that little tight car will get handed down to him and he'll probably end up with more of that stuff because he has the cumulative effect of more, you know, more toys in the family over time. So it's sort of like you gotta assume it all evens out and I'm going to just give you permission, Amanda, to let that guilt go.
Yep. Let it go.
So, so we moved pretty quickly through those first two themes, if you will. We're going to take a quick sponsor break and then get into some more. So, Megan, tell me about HelloFresh. You got to try the meal delivery service, and I want to hear how wonderful this was.
Okay, so here's the thing. Here's the thing about HelloFresh. Imagine a world where you come home on your lunch break, or if you are at home during the day, you step outside during your baby's nap, and there are boxes full of fresh food sitting on your doorstep.
Amazing.
And then you take them inside and you open it up and all of the meals are separately packaged. So all you have to do is just take the like individual little, they almost look like takeout boxes, but they're big, and you stick them in your fridge. And then when you're ready, there are pre-portioned ingredients and a recipe card and you just make it.
It's so great.
You never had to go to the grocery store. So that is the reality of HelloFresh. I have used it now several times. And one of my favorite things about it actually was that it was easy enough for my teenage son to make dinner one
Love
night
that.
When I was late getting home. It also really inspired me to do, you know, I'm good at cooking for my family, but I tend to make the same stuff over and over and over.
Right.
And I don't experiment a lot with new cuts of meat. I don't experiment with new flavor profiles, as they say on the Food Network. And so it really kind of helped give me a little shove to try a few more inventive recipes that were still totally family friendly. So they weren't like crazy inventive. They were just like different ingredients. Like slightly
and
different.
They're curated by real chefs and the menus change weekly. So the variety and like you said, the ability to introduce new ideas to your same old routine. They also have 3 plans to choose from. So there's classic, which is just a variety of meat, fish, and seasonal produce. There's vegetarian, which come with plant-based proteins, grains, and seasonal produce. We actually got to try that one in my family and it was really great. And then they have a family plan or a family menu, which is quick and easy meals for, you know, busy families. So just that the wide selection and the flexibility of choosing which one works for your family is awesome. I loved hearing that Jacob cooked for you guys. And you can pick a time, pick your delivery schedule based on when you're going to need it. So it's not something you have to sign up for, you know, commit to every day for weeks at a time.
Exactly. And I also really appreciated that the food was delivered in insulated packages. So had I not come home at lunch and it sat outside all day, it would not have mattered. Like it was on a thick block of like ice. It was fine. The meat would have been totally fresh. It would have been totally fine. Another really cool thing about it is that there's always a 20-minute meal on the classic menu.
I love that.
And so if you have one night a week that like you have sports or activities or you just know that you're not going to have a lot of time to put a meal together, that also really helps. So one of our favorite items was the Super Soy chicken tenders from the family meal plan, but everything we've tried so far has been fantastic. So
I feel like my kids
very happy.
Would love that. So if you guys want $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, you visit HelloFresh.com and enter MomHour30. So again, it's HelloFresh.com. Code is MomHour30, and that will save you $30. So thanks to HelloFresh.
Nice. Great deal.
Okay, so we're going to switch up our kind of topic here, and we got two different questions about holiday birthdays. Now, Megan, neither you nor I have Christmassy birthdays ourselves, and the closest kid in your family is what, early December, right?
Oh, and he's December 6th.
Okay, so not
quite. It's kind of, it's not super holiday, but I will say it is pushing it in terms of planning a birthday party.
Right.
And also just like, I'm already thinking about the holidays by
that
point.
Yeah, it's just the craziness. Yeah.
Right. It's like, I've already started budgeting for the holidays. So yes, it's not, I don't have like a kid with a, you know, Christmas Eve birthday or anything,
right.
But it's still, yeah.
So Brittany, we got this question in kind of two different ways, which was fun. But Brittany has a 3-year-old and her birthday was a couple of days ago. So mid-December. And just wondering how to separate birthday from Christmas and how not to spoil her, but also make both special. And if you go to our Instagram on this comment thread, there were some really great other comments responding to her from other moms. And it was cute. And really what the consensus was just simple little traditions that you do for any kid's birthday, like mm-hmm. a balloon on the chair, or Katie chimed in to say she decorates her daughter's door. And our Katie, actually, her daughter has a mid-December birthday as well. So sticking with the little simple family traditions that don't cost a lot of money, it's not like you're ignoring the fact that it's the middle of the Christmas season, but you're just, you know, you're wrapping the gifts in birthday paper and not Christmas paper. And like, I think over time, don't you think that kids will feel that that is separate and different? But I think it's probably hardest on mom. It's just a really busy time of year.
It is a busy time of year. And Owen's birthday is the cap to our birthday season.
Right. Yes. We talked about that.
Stretches from September.
Recently.
There's four birthdays in September, October, November, and December. And so one thing I've done, I don't know if this is actually a strategy or if it was like just a survival mechanism at some point, but we've really downplayed birthdays as big gift giving events. Mm-hmm. They are cake and ice cream with the family. Probably average every other year you get a real party.
Yeah.
So, you know, one year it might be you have a couple friends spend the night. The next year you have a real party kind of mm-hmm. a thing. And then it's like two or three gifts.
Right.
We don't spend more than $100 on a kid at their birthday, and typically less. And often one of those gifts is something they needed anyway.
Right.
Like new shoes or something.
Yeah.
So having done that, it really kind of helps that no one feels like the kid with the closest birthday to Christmas doesn't feel like they got the shaft because
right.
everyone's birthday is kind of low-key.
Yes. I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to say the same thing. Whatever your philosophy is going to be around birthdays and Christmas, really the December kid should be roughly the same. Now, having said that, I do feel like we talked about, the younger kids don't really notice. So
right.
if you need to kind of like put some of the Christmas toward the birthday to even things out or whatever, I don't
right.
think they really start to notice, but eventually they do. And I think keeping birthdays a relatively low gift giving threshold is a great strategy, especially if you have multiple kids. And there's lots of ways to make a birthday kid feel special that aren't just the loot and the, you know,
exactly.
the stuff to get. So
We can link to our episode about, I know we've done an episode about that, right?
Or birthdays?
We talk about,
we've done an episode about everything.
You're right. We're done. This is our last episode.
Glad you got your questions in, guys. No, but yeah. And I will link also to the comment thread on Instagram, because there were some great ideas, and they were all the simple, special little things, decorating the child's door, you know, making sure that they got to pick the special dinner
right.
meal. It's all the things that aren't necessarily gift giving based.
Exactly.
And then just as from the adult perspective, you would have to budget differently in December, but you have to do that no matter when your kid's birthdays fall. You know, I have one kid with
right.
a January birthday, so then you have to make sure, oh,
there's something
left. Did she get everything? Yeah, that's usually, that's the challenge. Okay, so Jenny is a listener and she is turning 40. So this is why I wanted to make sure we address this question, because happy birthday, Jenny.
Happy birthday, Jenny.
On January 2nd. And she said, every year I struggle with having a spirit of fun and festivities for my birthday after the holidays are done. And this year I'm turning 40. I'd love some advice for bringing a party spirit when everyone is done. It's even the first day back to school.
Oof, that's tough.
Yeah. So you just had your 40th.
Yes, I did.
My
well,
mom. Yeah, go ahead. I was going to
well,
say.
I was just. No, Sarah, you go ahead.
Okay. My mom's birthday is December 29th, which is also right in the wind down. And she has talked about how at certain times in her life, it was a crummier time to have a birthday than others. Now she actually really likes it because we tend to be together still.
Right.
The craziness has calmed down and it's just sort of a quiet family-oriented time of year. Now, January 2nd, I guess, gets just past that to where now really New Year's is done, and really it is the beginning of the new
right.
year.
Yeah. So I think I would say, how important is it to you that you have some festive party on the 2nd? Could it be combined with a New Year's Eve party?
Mm.
Could you just declare New Year's Eve your holiday?
Yeah.
Could you just say that you're going to have a birthday week? And so everything doesn't have to happen. I've kind of had like a lot of fun over the last couple of years of just being like, no, this is my birthday week.
Yeah.
It's my birthday the whole week. Now, does that mean I walk around with a tiara on? No.
Yes.
And I still do the dishes and, you know, fold the laundry. It's not like that. It's more just like looking for little opportunities to celebrate my birthday.
Right.
And Sarah, you were here for my 40th.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And we did like 3 days.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like crazy go nuts the entire time.
Yes. No, I agree. And I think also, so I have a holiday birthday in that it's Valentine's Day. That's a little bit different. It's not during these yeah. Christmas holidays, but it is sometimes a day that gets like dominated in different ways. When I was growing yeah. up, it was dominated by kids stuff. Now it's dominated by my own kids stuff. So anytime I guess your birthday falls in that category, I think it does just help to check in with yourself like a month before, like you said, and like, what do I want to do on my birthday? So, right. There's been some years where I want kind of a quiet, normal day, but like a fun, normal day. Like,
right.
I want my favorite lunch. I want, you know, but I don't want a big party. If I'm turning 40 in a couple of years, I probably will want a big party. So, yeah, I would just say I hear you, Jenny. It is kind of a tricky time of year. I like your idea, Megan, of just declaring it a week or declaring the night that makes the most sense.
Yeah, pick a night that makes sense and just have that be like your party. And if it doesn't fall on the 2nd, maybe just choose like some find a quiet way to recognize it on the 2nd.
And I will say, even if everyone seems like they're quote unquote done, because, you know, there is that sort of like deflated feeling after the holidays, the people closest to you who want to celebrate you, they will rally. They will.
Yes.
And then the last thing I would say is, if you plan something that's not on January 2nd, just make sure you have something in mind for your actual birthday. I had one birthday where like it was like that. I think we had celebrated over President's Day and it was like all the celebrations were done. And then I just had this weird feeling on my birthday, like there was nothing special. Like it was all yeah. at all. So plan something. Take yourself out to lunch.
Here's another idea. You could use, if you're going to plan a trip or something, you could use the 2nd. Your actual birthday as the day you book all the airfare.
Oh, yes. Like treat yourself. Like
So not maybe the day you actually do it.
Yeah.
But the day that you make all the plans to do it, which is fun too.
Yeah.
Like just making those plans. So like just make sure you have something special to do, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the big event. You could just
totally.
Be planning the big event on your birthday.
And happy birthday, Jenny.
Happy birthday.
40th.
40's great.
40 is great. Okay. So our last kind of big section, is around relatives, those tricky people we're related to at the holidays. And I think what it comes down to is our kids' behavior when we're in the presence of others. And that's like a whole episode in and of itself. But here's the first question. This can get us started. Came from Rebecca. She asked, how do you enforce your rules and expectations when traveling or at someone else's house or around cousins that may not behave in the same way? So that's a really good question.
Yeah.
You want to start?
Ooh, well, okay. So my philosophy has always been, if we're in my house, they're my house rules.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in my house, you follow my house rules.
Mm-hmm.
If my family is in someone else's house, my kids have to follow my house rules, regardless of what everyone else is doing, unless I choose to
defer.
Relax them.
Yeah.
Which I often do.
Sure.
So yeah, no, people aren't going to parent the same way as you.
Right.
And other people's kids aren't going to act the same way as yours.
Right.
And also, my tolerance for other people's kids is always lower than my own, mostly
mm-hmm.
because I'm not used to the way they're annoying yet.
Like, right.
I know how my kids are annoying, and I know I can anticipate what they're going to do that's going to get under my skin. And I have the power to do
right.
something about it. And I don't have that power about other kids. So sometimes if you're like me and you're not a big lover of other people's kids, just gonna put it that way,
yeah,
it's really easy to get almost like unfairly judgy or annoyed by other people's kids
mm-hmm.
because you're not used to their particular brand of obnoxiousness
mm-hmm.
and there's nothing you can do about it,
right?
So just I guess those are two big caveats, just as to say, like, you can still absolutely enforce your rules and expectations. You may just feel, you might find that it's better or you're happier if you relax stuff a little
yes.
bit.
Yes. And I would say, yeah, I totally agree. I think that was a perfect answer. I'm not sure even I need to add much, but I would say when you're picking and choosing, I tend to stick more strictly to the rules and expectations that keep my kids happy and healthy. So like I will use the example of screen time. I have stricter screen time rules than most families. And part of it is because I have one child who is really, really has behavioral issues when he does too much gaming, iPad. So me sticking to that rule and expectation isn't just about being a stickler or about like showing off that I have strict screen time rules. It's because if I relax that rule, it really has an effect on our whole family dynamic. Whereas yeah. sugar or bedtimes are things that I'm much more likely to let go or just go with. Like my kids go to bed early normally, but they're really pretty good at staying up late now. They didn't used to be. But so I'd be much more likely to go with whatever the house rules are. Like, oh, your kids stay up later? Great. My kids can hang because it's not going to come back and bite me in the same way. So I think just like we talked about earlier, picking and choosing which events you're going to mess with your schedule, I think just being a little bit strategic about it and sticking to some of them and letting others go and picking and choosing the ones that contribute back to your own happiness and your own.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So, but I do know that my kids don't have same age cousins, and we did that episode about cousins recently. But I do imagine that, especially with kind of behavior and discipline issues, that I'm sure that gets hard when it's a whole gaggle of kids and there's just different expectations.
There's 16, kids in my family. And so, yes. And especially when they were all little together, or like a lot of them were little together. I will also say, though, and I feel like I've said this before, I feel like I'm repeating myself a lot tonight, but don't assume that anyone else at the party is picking up on what your rules are. Like, you might think you're making it really obvious and the other parents are going to get on board and help you.
Right.
And they might not have any idea what's going on. They might be so focused on their own kids. They might be so glad that their kids are being good and they're just getting a break. Like, whatever reason it is, they might just not know. So I have never found it to be an issue. Like, if someone ever came to me, my kids have had pretty relaxed screen time rules for the most part. But if anyone ever came to me, and they have many times, and just was just like, I think it'd be best if the kids all shut off their whatevers by 7 because my kids have a hard time winding down, or my kids aren't allowed to watch this or play that.
Right.
I am happy to enforce that with my kids
and
to not make it like, oh, well, you can't do that because your cousin can't, there's ways to do it. Like, hey, guys, let's play a game. And I think sometimes it takes actually saying it in so many words to whoever the other adults at the party. Otherwise, they might just not notice.
Yeah.
So don't assume that other parents are like blowing you off or accepting your rules or whatever.
Right. And we tend to be a little bit insecure about our own parenting and rules, especially when we're new. So we can assume that other people are really confident in theirs and they've thought it all through and they know what they're doing. And we're the ones floundering. But really, everybody's floundering. So most people, I think, are pretty willing to work with you, just like you said,
sometimes it takes being the one who kind of spearheads it, and you can do that in a super non-judgy way. Like, you could walk in the room and say, hey, I was thinking, everyone's playing cards, let's say, and you walk in and say, like, hey, I was thinking it'd be great for the kids to like put away the tablets and do something different, or I would love for the kids to start getting settled into bed. And of course a couple other parents are going to jump up and help you,
right?
And it's not a big deal,
right?
Like, there's ways to say things in a way that's just kind of upbeat and chipper and not like, why are these kids still running around,
right?
And where everyone can get on board together,
right?
I
totally agree. Okay, next question came from Sam, who asks, how do you tactfully tell the grandparents to rein it in with the gifts? Ooh. And I don't know that you do, really.
No, I
don't.
My
short answer. But I've talked on this show before about having extremely generous gift giving family members. That was a little stressful for me early in parenting. And I will say it just got better with time because gifts get more expensive and there's more grandkids. So if it's a spoiling issue, it often kind of gets better with time. Another tactic, and this may sound a little callous, but if they're asking what you like, you can put higher dollar value items on your kids' wish list. And I don't mean that to like get money out of somebody, but if it's the type of grandparents who like to buy a lot of inexpensive toys just for the sheer quantity, I think you can gently steer them toward higher quality, which will eventually result in less quantity. Does that make sense? Like,
yes,
oh gosh,
sure.
You're so generous. We'd really love those Magnetiles set for Christmas. We've had it on our list and they're kind of an investment. We would be so grateful. And those are like $120 and they're not going to buy $120 worth of crappy plastic toys. Do you know what I mean? So that's another, without telling them to rein it in, it's more of like a redistribution of dollars toward high quality stuff if they're willing to accept those suggestions. So
yeah, I think, okay, so this is a problem that has a shelf life in most families, totally. Like you were saying. And when you've got a new baby or a 2-year-old or whenever it starts to get fun to buy them gifts, grandparents sometimes do go a little nuts, but quickly the value of what they're getting out of the amount they have to spend to get the reaction isn't like worth it. I mean, I think that, you know, when my kids were really, really little, like I think that the grandparents did love to just have a huge pile of gifts under the tree. And over time that did kind of go away. And some of that was maybe some gentle boundary setting, but honestly, I don't even think mostly it was that. I think mostly it was just waiting it out. And that's not to say that you're at someone else's mercy, but I think especially when your kids are little, there's ways to deal with getting around that that don't have to mean having an awkward conversation.
Yeah,
with
I don't
your
think
in-laws,
I don't you think really you need to have the awkward conversation. Also, most of my kids have opened gifts not in the presence of gift giving relatives, but if the grandparents are watching, if anyone's watched a 1-year-old try to get through a whole day's worth of Christmas presents, it's often very clear very soon that they don't have the attention span. They're not able to appreciate it.
Right.
So it may become even apparent to the grandparent, like, we should spread this out throughout the year or put some of these away for birthday, because it's not actually fun. They're not actually appreciating it. I mean, I want to give grandparents like the credit and the break they deserve. It's fun to buy when you have a new person in the family. It's super fun. I have a new niece. It's fun to buy. And so I think most of it comes from love. And I 100% agree with you, Megan. I don't think it's like one awkward conversation. I think it's gentle boundaries and just waiting it out.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Waiting it out.
Okay. So I think we have time for one more. This one is a tough one, and this is about really tough family dynamics. So she said, there's a family member who feels it necessary to belittle her children and her parenting style to the point that her teenager doesn't even want to go be around them anymore. So I think this is tough. And I'm wondering, especially with teenagers, Megan, I'm not saying you have this situation where there's a very rude family member, but you do have teenagers, and it is an interesting position to be in where your older kids have an opinion about where they spend the holidays, which relatives they feel closer to or don't. So that is something that's challenging.
Yeah, it is really challenging. I will say this is something that surprised me. I when my sister's kids were all older than mine, so by the time, well, except for Quinn. So my sister had three, and Cecily, the youngest of her first three, group of three, is a year older than Jacob. Then I had several. And then Owen and Quinn, her fourth, are within the year. Like, I think they're like 7 months apart. So anyway, so there was a bunch of kids that were much older than mine. And I remember her giving her kids a lot of autonomy over where they went. And when they were teenagers, and thinking, well, that's weird. I'll just tell my kid what they have to do, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm kind of realizing, you know, no one wins when you try to bring a surly teenager to something they don't want to be at. I think the way that I would probably handle something like that is to honestly just avoid the sister-in-law as much as possible. So that might be coming, you know, with the 16-year-old or without for an hour, saying hello, putting in the, you know, like kind of showing up and showing your face, I guess, and
doing
then going
the
home and spending
duty.
Your time with your 16-year-old, who is the priority in the situation. I know that's easier said than done, especially if this is a longstanding tradition and it's something that everybody does every year, but you don't have to be a part of that. Like, you don't have to expose yourself to that. And you don't have to have somebody who belittles you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
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 So to me, that's pretty, I mean, it's not simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. It's simple in that the priority is your 16-year-old and your relationship with, she doesn't say whether it's a boy or a girl. Your relationship with your teenager is priority number one. Your well-being is priority, you know, also 1A. And what everyone else wants you to do is like priority 15,000.
Yeah.
So figure out what you have to do to make sure those top two priorities are met and maybe still make it a little easier on yourself by showing up for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't feel any obligation to that at all.
Yeah. You know, a long time ago, we did an episode about dealing with criticism. And I can link that up. But I remember that one thing that we both discussed was how helpful it is to have a kind of buddy or an ally in any kind of like a hostile family situation. So whether it's your spouse or partner, if they happen to be on your side, or another family member who just sees what you see. And unfortunately, there are these situations where someone's extra critical and bitter and they have their own, you know what, going on. And but if there is an ally, and not just so you can vent about it later, but somebody who sees what you see and, you know, can meet your eyes across the room and be like, you know, I've got your back. Like, you're not, you know, like, hold your ground. Right. So hopefully you have, I mean, hopefully this listener has that. And then I'm with you. Just limit the exposure to that toxicness and, you know, fill the rest of your holiday time with people who make you feel good.
Yep, absolutely.
So, okay, I think this is a good place to wrap up, but we did take on a lot. Not every single one, but a lot of our
We had a lot of questions today. Yeah. So good for us. Big pat on the back. Yeah. And we're doing this again soon, right?
Yeah, we're going to take more listener questions next week, and they will not be holiday related because all of this will be behind us. Christmas.
Can you even believe that?
No.
The next time that we have an episode out, like, all it'll be over.
Yeah, it will. So actually, there is still time, though, because we haven't recorded that one yet. So if you have regular old parenting questions, and we won't probably go through as many, but if you've been listening for a while, we do these episodes fairly often, and I do have room for a couple more questions. So you just email those to hello@themomhour.com. Send us your questions. If we don't take them this next time, I always keep those and go back to them later. So I think we're going to link to a few different episodes at themomhour.com. So look for this episode 134 and look for the show notes, and we'll link those up. And we also have all of our holiday episodes linked up on one single page, including some other ones like this. So you can binge out on Holiday Mom Hour this week as you get ready for the
holiday. Sounds like a way to ring in. Yes. Ring in the holiday.
So Merry Christmas, you guys, if you celebrate Christmas, and happy holidays.
We'll see you on the other side.